John chapter 13 and the 34th and the 35th verses. A new command I give you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. This is meant to be a time of the year when people get together and enjoy each other's company. The reality is that statistically, this is the most harmful time of the year to families. There are more separations that take place in the weeks immediately after Christmas and New Year than at any other time of the year. There are many reasons for that. There's the stress that people put themselves under for the sake of the family. It's quite ironic that when people put themselves under the stress for the family, that what it does, it breaks up the family in many ways. Jesus here speaks to his disciples, and he is very clear about his command to them. And I think that it is of the utmost importance to us as Christians that we understand this command. Jesus refers to it as a new commandment. And the word new, because of its position in the sentence, right at the very beginning of the statement, shows that Jesus is being emphatic. He is stressing the newness of this command. Jesus chooses to stress the importance of this command by his assertion that it is a new commandment. This commandment is to love one another. Now, in a sense, it was quite puzzling that he makes a statement, this is a new commandment, because if you go back into the Old Testament, to the very beginning of the history of God's people, we find that this truth, this command to love one another was integral, important, significant in the law of God. In the book of Leviticus chapter 18 verse 19, we have the words, "Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." So it's not the case that the idea of loving one another is a New Testament concept. It's something that was key to the household of God throughout their entire history. So in what sense is this new? Well, it's new because it is spoken by the Savior of the world. The world being his people. And the life and the work of the Lord Jesus Christ fills this commandment with a whole new meaning. And I want to consider the new meaning, the new purpose, and the new elements that Christ endued this command with. I want to look first at the new purpose which he gives to this command. Another way to describe it is the new motives that he lays as the foundation of this command. We need motivation to do anything. We need a reason to do what we would otherwise not do. We are well adept at not doing something often that is necessary. We need a good reason to do it. We need a good justification. And here, Jesus tells us that we are to love one another. And he provides for us a very powerful motivation. First, he says, we are to love one another just as I have loved you. The reason why many people today cannot love is because they have never experienced true love themselves. Psychiatrists tell us that most of those who abuse children because they themselves were abused. Now that is not a justification or a warrant for what they do, but it's a factual analysis of what has happened. And it's the same with those who are cruel to other people. You look into their family background and they are cruelly experienced cruelty in their own lives when they were children. And it's the same with people who haven't been loved. People who have not been truly loved as children. People who have been brought up in an environment where there has been an absence of real, genuine love. Find it difficult to love. They don't know how to relate to other people. Because during the formative years of their lives, it wasn't modeled for them. And that absence of modeling resulted in them developing patterns of behavior, which then become ingrained in their personality, which means that in turn, they find it extremely difficult to actually love other people. That, by the way, is a very strong reason why parents, we as parents, should work at loving our children. Loving our children is not giving them what they want all the time, but loving them is seeking to understand them and care for them. A Christian, by their very definition, is a person who has received the saving love of Jesus Christ. A Christian is someone who, because of God's love set upon them before the foundation of the world, receives the manifestation of that love in time through the work of the Lord Jesus Christ in their life. And the idea, the truth, that Jesus Christ loves us and that he has shed abroad his love in our hearts is a wonderful, wonderful truth. And it's something that we should be seeking to remind ourselves of every single day. Because throughout the difficulties of life and through our dealings with other people and our relationships with other people, the reality is there are not too many people who do love us as individuals, who really love us for a variety of reasons. Often it's our fault. Often it's their fault. It's always because of sin. But we should labor for the good of our minds and our hearts. We should labor to remind ourselves of the fact that Christ loved us and gave himself for us. Because our grasping of that truth, our seizing on that reality, will bring a stability to our lives. It will affect our psychology of how we perceive ourselves. But more important than that, this fact of Christ having loved us is the reason why we are to love other people. It is because he has loved us, as he says in 1 John chapter 4, verse 11. Friends, since God so loved you, we also ought to love one another. So why are we to love other people? Are we to love them because we like them? Are we to love them because they give to us that which we want? No, the primary reason why we are to love other people is because He has loved us. And unless and until we actually grasp that fact and the implications of that truth, we will struggle when it comes to loving other people. Because if we don't grasp the fact that He loved us, then we will not place ourselves in the right context where we can love them. We haven't even begun to think about loving them yet. We haven't even begun to think about what's involved in loving other people yet. We haven't even begun to think about who are the other people we should love. We're just looking at how do we place ourselves in the right psychological heart place in order to facilitate a capacity within us to love other people. And the key element is to remind ourselves that we are loved and that He has loved us. And the second reason or the second motivation as to why we should love other people is because Jesus has loved our fellow Christians. We are to love other believers in Jesus Christ because Jesus Christ died on the cross to redeem them from a lost eternity. They may be awkward, they may be cantankerous, they may be unlikable. The truth is that often there are more unlikable people in the church than there are likable people outside the church. Frequently there are people in the church who have personality traits, ways of thinking and acting that can really irk us. And there are people out with Christ who we can find ourselves getting on with really well. But we are to love those whom we find difficult to like. Why? Because Christ on the cross shed His blood for that person. Christ died to redeem that individual because that individual was loved by God before the foundation of the world. Remember what Paul says in Romans chapter 14 to careless and irresponsible Christians? He says, "Do not by your eating destroy your brother for whom Christ died." Do not destroy your brother for whom Christ died. That's how much He loved them. That's how much He desired to redeem them. We are to love our fellow Christians because Christ died to redeem them. We're to love our fellow Christians because Christ lives in them. Jesus says, we are to receive those whom we meet as though we are receiving Him. And whilst Christ is not fully formed in all of us, in the sense of the fact that we are perfect and holy, the reality is that even the most awkward, difficult, unlikable Christian has more of Christ in them than the most likable, pleasant, gracious, unbeliever. And we are to love them because Christ lives in them. And we're to love them, thirdly, because one day Christ will reign through them. One day they will be glorious. One day they will be wonderful. One day they will be exalted. One day they will stand with us in the great company of the saints. And they will be there because Christ died for them and Christ lives in them. And Christ ultimately shall reign through them. And when Christ says, I give you a new command to love one another, he's saying it because he knows that it is difficult for us to do it. He knows that it's not easy for us to do it. He knows that the church that he is going to build is not going to be composed of people who always get on wonderfully well. He knows that he's bringing them from diverse cultural and social backgrounds. There will be things that will happen in the church that will irk many of the people. And so Jesus is saying to them, you are not simply to like other Christians. You're not simply just to get on with those whose personalities appeal to you. He says, you are to love them because I have loved you and I have loved them. Now, isn't that wonderfully liberating? Isn't that fantastic? We have actually been set free from liking each other. That in many ways, we may not like each other the things we do. But we don't have to strain ourselves to like each other. We don't have to make a huge effort to like each other. What we have to do is remind ourselves that Christ loved us, loves us, and that we are to love one another because of the work and that Christ has done and that Christ is doing and Christ shall do in each other. That we're to look at each other and not think of each other's foibles and weaknesses, but that we're to look at each other and say, Christ dwells. There is clear evidence in his heart and his mind of the work of Christ, and one day he or she will be perfect in Christ. And I will love them because Christ loved me, and I will love them because Christ loves them. And so it takes it away from being me and the individual to me and Christ and the individual. And who I am loving is not the person and what they present. Who I am loving is Christ in that person. And so when I think of them and I think of the things that annoy me about them and I think about their idiosyncrasies and I think about the annoying factors, I don't have to dwell on that. I dwell on the reality of Christ. Now this is extremely liberating in its truth. This is phenomenally powerful. We are to love because Christ loved us. We're to love because Christ loves them. How then is this love for Christ in the person to manifest itself? What pattern? What model? What means has Christ given to us? How are we actually to express this love? Jesus says that we're to love one another just as he has loved us. Exactly in the same way as Christ has loved us, we are to love each other. Love other people in exactly the same way as I have loved you, Jesus says. How has Christ loved us? Well, his love has been sovereign and unconditional. When Christ loved us, what was worthy in us that drew out his love? When Christ loved us, what was there in us that was lovable? When Christ loved us, what was there in us that was pleasant and attractive? Surely Christ is the one who loved those who hurt him, who offended him, and who rebelled against him. Is Christ not the one who loves those who are wholly unattractive in every and any way? What was it that caused Christ to love people, including us? What is it that we can take out of his pattern of loving that we can consider and think about and apply in the fulfillment of this new commandment to us? Here it is. He loves because of who he is, and not because of who we are. He loves because of who he is, and not because of who we are. He loves because he took a decision to love us. Jesus Christ chooses to love us. He chooses to love us regardless of whether we are worthy of his love or not. His love did not depend on whether we deserved his love. His love did not depend on whether we had earned his love. His love did not depend on whether or not we were doing that which merited his love. Christ is love because God is love, and Christ, who is love, chose and chooses to love us simply because he chooses to love us. He doesn't respond. He doesn't reciprocate. He doesn't react to what's in us. There is nothing that we can do that will hinder or prevent the unconditional sovereign love of Christ. It's not within our power to stop him loving us. It's not within our ability to restrict his love for us. And the reason for that is because he loves us, because he loves us. Isn't our love completely different from that? Our love is conditional. Our love is dependent, often first, on the lovability of the person. Our love is dependent, secondly, on the love the person gives to us. Our love is not so much about who we are, more about who they are. And our love is not unconditional. Our love is always conditional, almost all the time. It depends on reaction, response, and reciprocation. And when Christ says to us, as I have loved you, you are to love one another. If Jesus had said to us, I will love you as long as you don't offend me. I will love you as long as you do what I want you to do. If Jesus had said before going to the cross, yes, God, I will go to the cross and I will pay this unimaginable price, I'll do it on the condition that these people really, really give themselves to loving me and obeying me, would any of us be in heaven? Jesus went to the cross in full knowledge that his love was not conditional upon us. His love arose because he chose to love us regardless, irrespective of our thought processes, our words, and our actions. If it had been in any way dependent on us, if his love had been dependent upon us at all, none of us would be here tonight. And that's how we're to love. We're to love unconditionally. We're to love because we see Christ in them. We're to love because Christ has loved us. We're to love out of a heart that loves them regardless of what they do to us. Now, sometimes that can be very hard. That can be very difficult. And that's because we are sinful men and women. Sometimes it's not easy to love when it's been thrown back in your face, when you're being accused of things you haven't done or haven't thought. But the reality is that this is a pattern that we must seek to bend our lives to. It's not adequate for us to say, I understand the theology, but I'm not going to apply it in practice because you don't live in my house. You don't work in the place I work in. You don't know the people that I engage with in the church. You don't know the other Christians I know. We have no liberty at all. The liberty we have is to love as Christ loved us. And again, how liberating is that? How freeing is that? We don't have to worry about gauging whether the person loves us. We don't have to assess where they're at, their thought processes, their heart condition in terms of their love for us. It's not about whether they love us or not. It's about, do I love her? Will I love him? It sets us free. Because we are the one that is choosing to love. And if it's thrown back in our face, well, that's what Jesus experienced. If it's spat in our eyes, well, that's what Jesus experienced. And whilst we will never attain to the magnitude of the love of Christ, is there not great hope and great joy in actually striving for that? Is it not liberating in our lives to know that I will love you and I will love other people regardless of what they think, regardless of what they say? I will love them because I have been loved. I will love them because Christ has loved them. I will love them because Christ loved them sovereignly out of his own choosing and unconditionally, not based on anything they did. And I will just love you, and I will love you with all my heart as much as I can. And there'll be times when I'll fail, but I will seek to love you. Is that not a wonderful, wonderful truth? Does that not set us free to be the people of God? And the other aspect of Christ's love was surely the sacrificial magnitude of it. Love, according to Christ, was spelt C-R-O-S-S. The cross. Did Jesus think when he said to these men in the upper room, love one another, that he was calling them to do something that was easy? When he says, as I have loved you, did he think it was easy for them to go out and love other people? What was in Jesus' mind when he says, just as I have loved you? Well, he was thinking of how he had loved them in the past. But he was also thinking of what was lying ahead. And he knew the magnitude of the cost that would be incurred in his manifesting his love. As John writes in 1 John, this is love. The manifestation of love is that God offered up his Son to be the propitiation sacrifice for our sin. Love cost Jesus his life. Love broke him. Love killed him. For God so loved the world that he wrapped everybody up in a nice blanket and told them that even though they were sinners, he, because of his love, would overlook their sin and he would welcome them to heaven no matter what. Well, to listen to many men preach at funerals today, you would think that's what love is. The love of God is you live your life whatever way you want, and the reality is God's a God of love and God will invite you into heaven. What an absolute, unmitigated disaster. What a terrible, terrible indictment on the love of Christ. To say that God's love means that he turns a blind eye. Is that not shrillingly evil? God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son. That's love. And when Jesus says, you're to love one another as I have loved you, that's love. Love was the cross or the nail and the hand. Love was the crown of thorns. Love was a spittle running down his face. Love was having the clothes ripped off him. Love was being nailed to that cross. Love was crying out to the Father. That's love. That's the reality of the love that Jesus, just as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And that's the reality of our love. To love other people breaks us. It really, really breaks us. They disappoint us. They hurt us. It's costly. And even we, sinful human beings, when we strive to love other men and women, and we begin to think, why should I love him? I love him because Christ has loved me. Why will I love her? Because Christ loves her. How will I love them? I will love them not on the basis of what they can give or bring to me or the church. I will love them because I will sovereignly choose to love them. Unconditionally. When you actually begin to think and act that way, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard. I have been broken this last few months by people I've invested time in. I've loved them unconditionally. I can say that in terms of human heart. Not without sin in a sense, but as pure as I can do, I've loved them and loved them and loved them. And I've given and I've given and I've given. Just walk away. Walk away. Not even with a word. Just walk away. And you show them love and you show them concern and you show them genuine, genuine heart sacrifice. And you invest in them. You give your time for them. You give your time when you'd rather be in your own home on a night. You get up, you leave your wife and you leave your family and you go to be with them. And you sit down with them, you spend time with them. And it's happened during 15, 16 years of ministry. It's not just happened recently, it's happened. This walk out and leave as if you have done some heinous thing against them. As though you've committed some terrible crime. And all you have endeavored to do with the best intention, the best motive of your heart, is to love them and to help them. But that's love. That's love. That is love. Love is not going to the people who are always nice and pleasant, and who always welcome you and always pat you on the back and say, oh, it's great to see you. It's great to love those people. Those people are a blessing. A blessing. You get a bowl of their soup, it's lovely. Beautiful. But you see, love that Christ is talking about is this love that gives and gives and gives and gives and gives. Love that kills. Jesus says, as I have loved you, you also must love one another deeply, intensely, passionately. John says in 1 John chapter 3:16, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for others. We ought to lay down our lives for others. That's love. Unconditional, sacrificial love. And it breaks. And it hurts. And it leaves you asking, why? Why do I bother? What is the point? Jesus Christ loved you when you turned your back on him every day and declared that you hated him. Jesus Christ loved you because he loved you, not because there was anything in you that was any good. Jesus Christ loved you to the point where he willingly laid down his life for you. When you despised him, and you reviled him, and you hated him, and you mocked him, that's the point. That's the point. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. This is not something that is light and easy. This is not something that can be summed up in a simple gesture. Thirdly and finally, why is this important? We're to love because Christ says love. We're to love because Christ has loved them. We're to love because we choose to love. We're to love in the way that Christ has loved, in a way that broke him and took him to his grave. And the thought of that, if we actually ponder that, is staggering. To love as Christ loved is to take us to our graves. Why? Because it's what Christ wants us to do. Many people have many ideas about what the Christian life's all about. Many people have many thoughts about how they should live the Christian life, about how the church should be run. Many people, even in a small church like ours, have thoughts about what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. It's inevitable. But here in this passage, Jesus says, love one another. Not once, not twice, but three times in the space of two verses. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Three times. Bang, bang, bang. It's like as if he's taking out the red pen and he's underscoring it and underscoring it and underscoring it. Here he is. In the last conversation he's having with these men whom he has loved, shared time with, fed, demonstrated his love to over a period of 3 years, and now he's going off and he's going to be separated from them. He's going to leave them. That's the next thing he's going to tell them. I'm going to leave you. And what is the truth that he leaves ringing in their ears? What is the one thought that predominates his drive towards them? It's love one another. Love one another. He says to them, my little children, I will be with you only a little longer. But before he leaves, he drives home this truth. Love one another. Imagine if you were at home and you had a relative, father, mother, some other one who's close to you, and you know that they're in the final hours of their lives, and they come to you and they say, I have something I want to tell you. Something that's very important. Something I want you to remember. Well, I'm gone. How would you respond to that? Would you say, well, I'll go and make a cup of tea and I'll come back in about half an hour? Or would you reach yourself across the bed and every word that comes out of that person's mouth at that time, would it not wage itself with such weight in your heart that you would never forget it? As they would say it to you, would you not be repeating the words in your own mind so that you would be gelling it in to your memory cells? Here is Jesus at the end of his life and he's telling these men whom he has loved, as I have loved you, love one another. Love one another. Love one another. Why is it important that we love one another? It's important that we love one another because he has loved us. Why is it important that we're to love one another? Because he has loved them. How is it important that we're to love them? We're to love them because we're to choose to love them. How are we to love them? We're to love them unconditionally. Are we at liberty not to pick this command up? No, we're not at liberty to pick this command up. Because this command flows out of the heart of the Father. Love one another. And as if we needed another reason, he says to us, love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples. Other people will look at you in the world, and when they see how you love one another, how you manifest that love and how you demonstrate that love with each other, they will then turn around and say, see, those people, they really believe in Jesus Christ. You see, communicating to the world that we believe in Jesus Christ is not about producing literature. Communicating to the world that we love Jesus Christ is not about having missions. Communicating to the world that we love Jesus Christ is not telling people, first and foremost, that they're going to hell and need to be saved. The world knows that about the church. The world knows that religious people stick leaflets through their letterbox. The world knows that religious people ask them to come to special meetings. The world knows that the church and religious people want to tell them about what's going to happen at the end of the world. The world knows that. It's not that we don't do it because the world knows it, but the world knows it. But what's the world crying out for? What's the world going to be crying out for the week after Christmas and the week after New Year? What's the world going to, the world is going to be crying out for the manifestation of real, genuine love. Not the sort of love that comes in a wee box with fancy paper around it saying, I love you. And then a week later saying, I don't love you anymore. What the world wants to see is the reality of true love, where people who don't like each other necessarily, they may not dislike each other, but people who don't have anything socially in common, people who don't have anything naturally, maybe culturally in common, people from different ages of the spectrum, people from different financial backgrounds, those people seem to have something that binds them together, and they really do care. They really care. And the world says, what is it that makes them care about each other? What is it that keeps them together? What is it that makes them different? What is it that makes us different? He loved us. He loved us. He loves us. Because he loved us, we love each other. And we love how we love in the way that he loved us. Not perfectly, imperfectly, but we seek to replicate how he loved us. We love each other not because we like each other necessarily. We love each other because we have chosen to love each other. Regardless of how we deal with each other. And we should deal with each other in a way that's proper and right. But we love each other because we have sovereignly taken the choice to love you. Not because you will give something to me. And we love in a way that costs. In a way that hurts. In a way that breaks us. And we love in a way that shows that this love is real. And when the world looks on and the world speaks and the world sees and the world hears, the world can see that. The world sees the reality of that. Regardless of what the world may say, the world sees the reality of that. We need to embrace this command. And we need to live this command. And it's not easy. It's hard. But it speaks to the world of our love. Surely, the most terrible thing that happens in the church today is when Christians and churches fall out. Our land in Scotland in the last 10 years, what is the impression the church, the Reformed Church, has given in large? They can't get on with each other. They lock each other out of each other's, out of their churches. And the world stands back and says, well, if they can't even get on with each other, what's the point in us joining them? Now, I'm not being simplistic. But there comes a time when we have to say, I'm forgoing. Forgoing what is mine. Because I love you. And you can take all that I have because I love you. And I will be hurt by it. And I will be broken by it. And I will be destroyed by it. But I will love. Not because you deserve it, not because you merit it, not because of any reason other than he loved me when I didn't deserve it. He loved me when I had no right to it. He loved me and he laid down his life for me. For me. Because he loved me, I will love you. And because he was broken for me, I will allow myself to be broken for you. And because he was killed for me on that cross, crucified to death, I will lay down my... This is not easy. This is not easy. But the world will look and see. It's real. It is real love. And then someone will come along and say, I want to hear about the God that has enabled you to do this. Because what you have chosen to do in human terms is nigh on impossible. And that's what the world needs to see. But we do it because he has loved us. I would encourage you to really think about this. Really to think about it. Because it can help you. It can help you in your life, in your home, in the church, and at work. It can really help you. Our biggest problem is we always respond. And it's lost. It's lost. When we are proactive because we understand the truth of this new commandment, it can bring great liberty at great cost. But it can bring great liberty and ultimately glory to our Father in heaven. And what else is our purpose in life? Amen.